Attorney Flegel.
I was one of the official supporters of that home when it got its license. I never did a thing about it. And I was one of the few people that was not Jews that Jewish that got in there on that. And they had the idea of opening up for a turkey.
Yeah.
Turkey is king. So. As a matter of fact, it was the first place to turn their restaurant into a turkey place. In the United States, they know.
Turkey that. Place, what do you mean?
That's
the main event, turkey.
Main deal.
The main event, that's
it's
all.
It's been that way for 35 years at least, for near 40 years.
Bernie Flegel started it up.
Bernie Flegel, and there was a bunch of
Minneapolis?
Those.
Yep.
Even the Behrmans were in on
it. Yeah, that's right. Art and Louis Behrman.
Yes, yeah.
Jack Dempsey come out there and help push it.
That's right.
Remember he took one of them turkeys back and one of the first flights by air into New York.
Well, Marty Abrams,
a
little lawyer, a humpback little Jewish lawyer, Swartz his name was, and he was the one that insisted that my name go on there. My name was very popular at that time, you know, and so I signed up, and then he went farther than that, and I was urging him to do this. They had a big back room there. Big back room. That was long after the strikes. This thing got going well, you know. And it turned out to be a moneymaker. You never saw anything like it. So they gave us the back room for the unemployed. One stage. But they had it for a teach-in. We didn't call it a teach-in in those days. It was a place that writers from the university campus and radicals, and or most of them were radicals. Even the CP, we tried to get in and we held them out of it. And we got that separate. And so we've been friends ever since. And I was in there one night.
What was his name?
Huh?
What was his name? Who's the guy that said you've been friends with ever since?
Oh, that was the.
Who's running this place?
Well, the same gang. I didn't know all of them.
No.
They knew me. I didn't know them.
I see.
And I knew who they were, that's all.
This place come about to make a living for Ernie Flegel, who was a fighter and who lost his eyesight.
I see. Yeah.
And over in St. Paul, they had Mike O'Dowd, a bunch of guys done the same thing, and they chipped in.
Yeah,
for the most part, they were hoodlums of one's.
Were all.
And they started this restaurant.
Yeah, they started the restaurant in Minneapolis for Ernie Flegel. They started a bar over in St. Paul for Mike O'Dowd.
To do with the story we're on now.
Yeah.
It is the fact that that these people were all next to the underworld.
That's the. I was just giving the history.
During the Prohibition days, booze runners and everything else, hijackers and one thing another. So in any case, I was in there one night eating. It's right close to the headquarters.
Yeah, it's half a block.
We go there, yeah.
Same side of the street.
Fairly reasonable place to eat, too. Huge big bar, and they sell more whiskey there than anything on Hennepin Avenue. So I saw a big table there. They have a big table where about 15 people can sit around it. Mm-hmm. And usually it's filled with a crowd of Jewish businessmen, lawyers, and come together for a council meeting or a little club atmosphere or something. I never knew what they talk about. Don't care. But this night, I was sitting there and I saw a big gang around there. They were not Jewish people to speak of. I know most of them, or know many of them. And so I went over in a booth and had a drink and a sandwich. I wanted to get out of there as quick as I could because I had something to do. I forgot what it was. It was about 8 or 9 o'clock at night. And so I heard somebody call, Hey, Ray Dunn. And I looked around, I couldn't tell it. First thing I know, I looked over this big table. And here's Fritz Snyder sitting there. And he called me over. He said, come on over and sit with us. Won't you go over there? I want to talk to you. I hadn't talked to him for years. And I knew his background very well. He was a fighter. He was a good guy.
A renegade.
Yeah, renegade, but he was a fighter.
You're damn right.
Yeah. So I had some respect for him. He always called himself a wobbly. You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you mean a fighter? So, a professional fighter?
Oh, yes.
Well,
yes, he fought in the ring.
Fighter, sure.
Ooh, and a vicious one.
Yeah, you bet.
You better believe it.
But I mean, in general, in the class struggle, he was
a fighter. Yes. All through the strikes and everything.
Yeah, so I went over and sat down. I shook hands with him. Then he introduced me to five or six guys around in there. I didn't know any of them. So two or three of them knew me.
Yeah.
And he said, did you see Hawk's latest book? And I said, no, I didn't. I heard about it coming out. And he said, well, I want to give you one of these, son. And he said, I think you appreciate it. And I said, I'm glad to have it, Chris. What's it all about? Well, he said, I wanted to give it to you anyway. And he said, I'm going to come out to your house when I want to have a talk with you. So I said, fine, I'd be glad to talk to you anytime, Fritz. What's on your mind? Well, he said, there's a lot of things that's troubling me, and I'd like to talk to you. So I said, okay, Fritz, come on out. You know, he said, I know where you live. He said, I know where you live. You're in the phone book, he said, I know. So I said, well, then I'm in a hurry, and I got to get out of here, but I'll be back with you to send the book out to me if you want to. He said, I want to bring it out to you. And I said, okay, we'll do that then. So, I don't know, the next two or three weeks I didn't hear from him, forgot about it, as a matter of fact. And all of a sudden, one day, special delivery, this book came out. Fritz didn't come out with it, you see.
No.
So, I didn't think any more of it, and I was going in to see him one day. I wanted to ask him some questions, because it was something that I thought he might remember that I didn't at that time. I went in there and he was busier than hell and I didn't bother. And he said, I'm sorry I couldn't come out, Ray. He said, I'm sorry I couldn't come out. He said, come on over and see me again. Well, I never got there.
It's an interesting thing.
I don't know what he wanted to talk about.
It's an interesting thing, you know.
He seemed very anxious to talk. He was talking in front of these other guys.
Yeah. Well, you know.
And what was his background?
His background, I'll tell you all about Ray, about him. His dad is an old ice wagon driver, belonged to old George Guider's Union, to 232 for years.
Yeah.
And Fritz started in, he got a brother and himself, they were both professional fighters, and they were big men.
Yeah.
They could hunt bears at the switch.
Yeah.
And I used to buddy-buddy with Fritz for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I drove truck with him. I taught him how to drive truck in lots of respects. And
I knew you were very friendly.
I taught him how to drive truck, because we was all together, quite a few of us there. Mm-hmm. You know, and working around in the industry. Mm-hmm. And when Fritz was just a helper, I should have taught a lot of them how to not only to drive truck, but how to do work with trucks. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, because just driving a truck is never what the employer hired you for. You had to do some work with that truck or you were down the road. Well, and Fritz was quite a drinker, and he was a kind of an irresponsible guy, and like most fighters, he had aspirations that he should have the gravy lick because he was a fighter. Okay. You'll find this is very true with fighters.
Well,
they always figure they're entitled to special privilege.
Yeah.
And because he was a bully, you know,
strong,
and strong, and had science and skill, and I was raised with him as a kid, in the same neighborhood up in Camden. And the only reason he didn't keep fighting, you know, was D.P. Nordstrom hit him with the pool ball up in Dad Boland's pool hall, all back in the 20s. And they got a stigma on his eye, and he couldn't fight under lights. It blinded him, see? He's only had one eye in the ring. He had two eyes, but in the ring he was blinded. Well, all during the day, he was working for that guy hauling ice, the 34 strike. He joined the strike.
No.
At the beginning. Now, he was a member of 232, I think, was George Guider's union, ice wagon drivers, you know. And Fritz joined. He quit that union, where his dad belonged. And they used to haul a lot of ice then, natural ice and cake ice.
Mm-hmm.
And he was hauling it in a big truck. They had all behind little filling stations and everything. They had these little ice houses.
Mm-hmm.
And he was delivering ice and cakes around town, not to the houses. And he joined the strike. And he played an active role.
Oh, yeah.
And he was a fighter. Oh, Christ, no average three men had a chance with him.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. No. He had science, he weighed over 200 pounds. Oh. And he was aggressive and vicious.
And he was in good shape, too.
Yes, he was always in shape. Even if he was drinking, he was in shape. He was always working out and dancing and jumping. Yeah. And we worked on many a jobs. We was on them organizing committees. We'd go around and go into a barn, and the next thing you know, and we was on them prize crews for the union, you know, down to Harry Brooks and all them places, where we'd pull the men off the job, and we'd go to work there, straighten them out, over to Montgomery Wards, Connolly Contracting. Then, when we opened up the new hall up in Plymouth and put the bar in, he was the bouncer. Well, Fritz figured he should have had a job on the staff of the union. This was his secret ambition.
That's right, I know that.
But he didn't have enough upstairs, really, to cut the mustard. No. And he didn't have enough devotion. No. You know, he was too single-minded. He was wanting to get the money.
They had a big ego.
Yeah, that's right.
Huge ego.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Most prize fighters.
And unreliable, because you couldn't tell when he's going to get drunk for a week or drunk for a month or what he was going to do when he was drinking. And he was the kind of a guy, Asher, that you'd be driving him home in his car and he'd Sunday you. Yeah. He'd start one right up from the ground and let you have it. Yeah. He's just out of his head. He'd been, he was a...
Especially if he was drinking. I know
that. Oh, God almighty, he's terrible. Mahoney's that way. But anyway, after the bar closed, as long as Fritz had the bouncer's job down there, he was satisfied. When the union closed the bar, Fritz figured then the union ought to employ him as on the staff. Well, they did used to use Fritz and the Fink drives and things like that, you know. And when there was any muscle needed, you never had to look twice for Fritz. He was there. You got to give the guy credit.
Yeah.
But when the riff started with Tommy Williams and that bunch, Fritz was crafty enough to see that there was a chance where he could get in. And he joined the goons. So he was a renegade. He joined the gang out. Well, he went to work as a footpad, you might say, in the Tobin Army.
Yeah, that's right.
And he generally, by Mito and by connivory and by the fact that he was identified with the bunch that built the union, the rest were imposters. And Fritz used this when he ran for office a couple of times, that he was the guy that was helped build the union.
Right.
He knew the Duns, and he was went through the struggles with them.
Yeah.
And he used this to an advantage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, when the going was rough, when they figured he was going to get dumped.
Yeah.
My brother Don told me that that was his battle cry.
Yeah.
And he joined the hoodlum element, and he wound up, and he's now Secretary Treasurer of the Union there.
In Minneapolis?
Yes.
And just he's a block from our headquarters.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. It's just a block.
Yeah.
Their address is 704 Hennepin,
and
the driver's union office is 700 First Avenue. Yeah.
What's your status in the union now, Ray? For the withdrawal? Or just thrown out?
I never really belonged to the union officially. I was given the card, but I never did much work for the union. Right? That's why I get so little pension.
Huh?
That's why I get so little pension. I was not on the payroll of the union very long. It was only when they were paying $25 a month and sometimes 50.
Yeah, and sometimes nothing at all, like we used to be there.
Huh? During all the organization of the first
time. When we built that union, Ray, you know it.
Yeah.
You were living on, and Grant was living on soldiers' pension or something. You were organizing for the party.
Yeah.
At that time, it was the American Workers' Party.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Yeah. The Workers' Party, not American.
The Workers' Party.
Yeah, the Workers' Party when we...
Merged with Musty.
Musty, right.
And then it became the American Workers' Party, didn't it?
No.
No, the Musty group was the American Workers' Party.
Yeah, that's right. That's
right. Workers' Party.
Yeah, when you merged, you became the Workers' Party.
Yeah, Workers' Party, that's right.
Then you went to the SLP. When you came to
the
SLP, it was
SLP. No, not in the SLW, in the SL. Socialist Labor Party?
SP.
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 That's right.
SP,
what am I thinking about SLP?
Yeah. Now then, those days when we were down there, when we paid the Viola and Ruth in the office and paid off Ness's widow, we had to start scrounging to get enough money for gas to go the next week on.
That's, right.
That's the way that union was built.
Yeah, right.
So you didn't get wealthy, all right? Now listen to this. Here's what it says. A letter to Padway from his nephew and assistant, I.E. Goldberg, on June 28th, praised the work of the outside organizers. This when they started raiding the Union, you know, when they broke it up. It is quite surprising there has been little or no violence to date. It is hardly believable that in dealing with such a tough situation, with fellows that are known killers, now they're talking about the local 544 leadership, that there has not been any serious trouble. 544 CIO, that's when you were the CIO, vigorously contested this view, claiming repeated violence against their supporters. Perhaps the difference centers about the meaning of serious trouble, and at any rate, the tactics were probably mutual. Along similar lines, Joe Casey advised in a June 24th telephone conversation with Tom Flynn, Dan Tobin's assistant, that, quote, the outside boys can work in there and they will take all the abuse in the world. With the local fellows, when they get into an argument, they immediately get into a fist fight because of old sores around here, end quote. Particularly commended in letters from Goldberg and Waksberg were the boys from Detroit led by Jimmy Hoffa, then in his 20s. It must have been a traumatic experience for young Hoffa, for today he recalls with strong emotion, quote, Vince Dunn was my friend, end quote, and Farrell Dobbs was his principal mentor. Participating in the Minneapolis purge helped foster the ruthless quality for which Hoffa is known. That he did his job so effectively is evidence that he already possessed substantial quantities of that trait.
Well, this is what James says. But does Hoffa admit that?
Well,
Hoffa says that he was not there in a capacity of... I'm not taking issue with you.
Yeah, no, I'm not either.
But when I was over to talk to James, he asked me about this.
Yeah.
And he says, I understood he talked to Farrell.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a guy around... Ray, you sent me a long letter on it. He crossed Farrell's trail. A guy by the name of David Salmon. He was a writer for the Teamsters. And he was doing a job at the time to prepare the 8th annual report for the National Freight Contract that was going to be held in Miami, Florida. And what he was trying to do was get the early days of the Teamsters organization. And Farrell referred him to me, you know, from that phase of it. Salmon never looked me up. I have Farrell's letter. I have it with me, as a matter of fact, because I think we discussed this one time,
yeah.
And I brought it along with me. Farrell, you know how he knew. He knew where I was. He could have got me in 5 minutes on the phone. But he played it coy. He says, well, I'll try to look the guy up, and because you see, like, you're covering up tracks all the time.
Yeah.
You don't lead the police to your door. You say, well, I don't know, he might live in another neighborhood.
Yeah.
So Salmon never looked me up. But the understanding that I've got from talking to James, that Hoffa admits that he was in Minneapolis, but he never stayed there.
I never saw him there.
Yeah.
Well, evidently he has some letters from the Teamsters files commending, like he says, the letters from such and such and such and such.
Hoffa, I think, has admitted that he did dispatch a bunch of guys to...
That's what I think he did to you.
And, but that he himself did not personally go there.
Not personally involved.
And the reason I'm beginning to believe that Hoffa is telling the truth is because at that time the Teamsters had Big Red O'Loughlin in there.
I know.
You see? And you see, all the truth that the Jameses has gotten, I told him that night I went over and visited them.
Mm-hmm.
I says, you haven't got the history straight of Local 299. I said, I don't care where you got your information. But I know the times, Local 299, Ray, and you will remember, during the days of the organization of the over-the-road drivers was in receivership. And there was no president. A guy by the name of Bennett and King were the guys that were had the purse strings.
I don't remember them.
Yeah, I know them well. Because the time that we hustled the money in Cincinnati, the first time that we got under the squeeze, and when we were charged with blowing up that truck up in South Dakota, when they got the 4 years on us for Spouts and Johnson, and the governor of Iowa wouldn't extradite me, so I didn't go to stand trial, it's all saved me. When they put up the money, Hoffa wasn't at the meeting, and Red O'Loughlin had to go a hold and get a hold of Bennett. to get the money. Hoffa and Bert Brennan were organizing the Studebaker tow-away drivers. That's what they were, and they were organized.
That talks about that in here. Just take that and read it and give it back to me.
Yeah.
You can get a copy of it.
Where can I get it?
Department of Institute of Industrial Relations.
Where at?
UC, University of California.
Ray, I've got to the point where I can't see without glasses when I have to read.
Well, I can't see without them either.
Oh, wow.
Well, take it and read it.
Long ago.
Well, I'd like to have
one. I don't see very good.
This is the thing that was written in the Western Political Quarterly.
Right.
Yeah. I haven't read this. I've heard about it.
Maybe I'll leave it here and let
let
Dan read it.
I know where to get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is more or less, a lot of this stuff is lifted out of the book.
It is.
Yeah. Haven't you read the book?
Not yet.
Hoffa and the Teamsters?
Not yet, I'm going to.
It's a book you should read.
Yeah.
Well, I just haven't had the money to buy it.
God, I could have let you have my lending copy. It's down right now, I've given it to the guys, and it's circulating around in the Longshore Local and Local 13, Art Alameda.
Well, if you don't want to buy it, why, you get it from the library, you can do that. It's in the library.
Yeah,
but it must be in every library.
It's out.
I've got a copy of Dynamite coming for you.
Oh, you have?
Yeah, I run one down through Marvel.
Oh, wonderful.
I picked up the autograph coffee up here and took it myself.
Oh.
And Johnny Tabor's got one coming from Boston.
Good. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. How much are we going to have to pay for it? I hope not too much.
$5 or $6.
Oh, that's all right.
Hmm?
That's nothing for that book.
Yeah. Hmm?
Mm-hmm.
Well.
Yeah, I'd like to read this.
Read it.
I know Farrell advised me to get it one time, and I slipped my mind for so long, I didn't remember what it was. Yeah.
I was over and met with the Jameses one night. I had quite a talk with them, left them some pictures. And, they've had access, Ray, to the files.
I know.
And
I read the book.
You know,
I read the whole
book.
But
when you talk to the James family, she's the sharper of the two, the way I got it paid. She's the sharpest.
Yeah.
But she was with child then about 6 months along, and she was a little tired in the evening. I was over there. I spent one evening there last April with them.
Did you know that the last convention of the Teamsters Union, that they came up to New York?
Hoffa sent them up.
Well, I don't know who sent them up. But they come up to try to get Dobbs to come down to Miami.
Yeah, to mentor the thing from the sidelines.
I don't think that Hoffa sent them.
Well, I disagree with you, Ray.
Oh.
It's not often that I do that, but I got to make myself known.
Well, I mean to say that...
What point would there be for him to invite...
What point would there be?
Farrell down.
There's a lot of points.
He might have thought that he could win over Farrell. That's about all I could think about.
Well, now, look...
He knows goddamn well he can't.
I don't think it was a question of him trying to win over Farrell. But I'm strong of the opinion, Ray, that he wanted to utilize Farrell. This is the opinion of Hoffa. Now, Hoffa was going into a fight in that convention where there were two movements that were lined up against him that had a Chinaman's chance, if there was a form of unification, to dump him.
Well, could be.
He had the convictions.
Could be.
He had the conviction.
Well, how was Farrell finished?
Well, just a moment.
Yeah.
James was on Hoffa's payroll. He told this to Farrell.
They deny it, and I would believe the James rather than them.
Yeah. Huh?
I say I would rather believe the James than I would Hoffa.
Yeah. Now, I'm talking about prior to the convention.
Oh.
You see? They never allowed that they were on Hoffa's payroll.
No.
No, they never said that. And I would
they
believe
said
them.
They were not.
Yeah, that's right, and I believe them.
Yeah, so do I.
But at the time of the convention, James had been working for Hoffa for about a month.
Yeah.
School was out. His semester was concluded, and he'd been 2 or 3 weeks working for Hoffa.
Could be.
Now, Hoffa's kind of like Billy Graham, you know. When he comes in there, he stakes out all the churches. No upstart's going to have a meeting across the street.
Yeah, I know that, but I still don't think that...
Well, now, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Hoffa's got James on the payroll for about 3 weeks. And one of the crucial days, right immediately prior to the convention, all of a sudden, out of a clear sky, In walks James into Pharaoh's office and offers Pharaoh to come to Miami, that the tab will be picked up, his way will be paid, his expenses will be covered, he'll be reimbursed for any loss of salary, to come with him to the convention. Now, the reason that I say Hoffa sent James is that James was a hired hand, and he wasn't up spending Hoffa's money without authorization.
If anything went wrong, he could deny it.
That's right. Well, that's what I believe.
But what did he want? No, it still doesn't explain right. Why. Would
see
he?
who in the leadership of the executive, that is all the vice presidents, who could use Pharaoh the best? You know.
Who could use him the best?
Yes.
Well, here's the
all
problem.
They needed to do was raise the Red Scare in the goddamn thing.
Yes, but there was a little bit more to it. There were some skeletons in that closet, Ray. Uh-huh. Now, here's Sandy O'Brien and Tommy Flynn.
Yeah.
Now, they're come of the top dogs in the Teamster Conference.
That's right.
Sandy O'Brien probably personally outranks anybody.
That's right.
Sandy O'Brien is the guy, when you go back into the history of 1938, when we went into Chicago, that organizationally was responsible for the immediate success of the Teamsters Union getting the over-the-road contract the year of 1948. Tommy Flynn come along a year later. He wasn't at that meeting when we
were. Those are the A's, the ABC's,
yeah,
I know.
That's right. Now, there was an element in the Teamsters Union who were Johnny-come-lately. There was an element in the Teamsters Union that are Johnny-come-latelys.
Right.
Tony Provenzo, Einar Mohn, and two or three other of these guys that were not around. And some of these guys were not quite sure which way they were going to go.
Yeah.
Whether they were going to line up with this learned, scholarly Gibbons,
I know.
Or whether they were going to line up with the rough, tough muscle boys that built the Union.
That's right.
It was it's been my considered opinion. Because Pharaoh called me immediately. He says, who do you think just dropped in my office? I said, who? He said, Ralph James. And he went on to state his purpose. He says, what do you make of it?
He told me the whole story.
Mm-hmm, he told me to.
Yeah.
And I said...
I never talked to him about it.
Mm-hmm.
He told me.
And I felt that what Hoffa was doing at the time was calculated to leave nothing to chance. Gibbons was in league with, at one time, Pharaoh, upset Tobin, and the mere fact that Pharaoh was there might lead Gibbons to quiet himself down. Now, there's all kinds of possibilities that we're going to speculate with. But I believe that Hoffa didn't want Pharaoh at the convention for anything other than his political sagacity of the Union, and the personal relationship that existed with some of the people, and for his advice, maybe. Hoffa, you know, didn't know everything either. Now, this is what I think, and I think Hoffa sent James up because I'm quite of the opinion that the skipper of the ship doesn't take his orders from the mess boy.
Well, you see, Sandy O'Brien and what's his name, the second one?
Tommy Flynn?
Or Tommy, you see, they could do this as a gag in order to get... Pharaoh wouldn't have been in that town for 40 minutes before everybody in the convention would have known about it. And those that sent for him would know that.
That's right.
Now, why would that help Hoffa?
Well,
you see, all the opposition would have to do was saying he's gone over to the Communist Party, for Christ's sake.
Let's go back a little farther now, Ray. Go back a little farther.
Yeah.
In the 8th Convention, Hoffa publicly announced that the man who was the architect, the man that laid the groundwork, the guy that made it possible for the national councils to become an actuality when they did, was Pharaoh Dawes. And I think
I have had reports of at least 10 speeches that he'd made like that in public.
That's right.
And he always says that.
That's right.
The only place he don't say it is in Minneapolis.
That's right. He glosses over the period from 34 to 41. That didn't exist. Yeah. But this is the reason why I say that Hoffa...
Why wouldn't he tell the people, as he told many other gatherings of his union, that?
He's told them in the National Conference.
I know, but not in Minneapolis.
No.
He said it in Chicago, he said it in St. Louis, he said it even down in the bailiwick of the Teamsters.
Yeah.
In Indiana.
That's
in
right, Indianapolis. I know that.
I know.
Well, we're not talking
and
about
and he puts
Minneapolis.
It down in writing, so
that's
it's
right.
Published.
But I think I don't think that the James, and Farrell seemed to agree with me at the time.
If he really wanted him, he'd have sent one of the vice presidents up, not James.
No, I disagree with you. I think he was sending them. Remember, it would be in a hell of a slap in the face. Who would have done the job? It would have had to have been Sandy or Tommy Flynn.
Well, that's what I think. They would probably use it against Hoffa.
Well, huh?
That's what I think. They would use it against Hoffa.
See, Tommy Flynn had more to lose from a personal encounter with Farrell because Tommy Flynn was at the wheel as the assistant to Tobin during the
fight. They could have disclaimed it and said it was a big joke, for Christ's sake. That's all they needed to do.
But
what the hell?
No, Ray, I don't agree. I believe that Hoffa was sent there, sent James, because it's easier for him to deny if... Assume now that...
Well, why didn't he take the phone or else send up a wire or do some goddamn thing?
Well, I'll tell you, if you let me explain, that I don't think that either Sandy O'Brien or Tommy Flynn would have come up to see Farrell because they were not quite sure whether Farrell would have turned them down, and they would have been embarrassed if he did.
Well, of course.
And I think Hoffa felt the same way.
Yeah, but they would... They would claim that Hoffa sent for him.
Who?
All they need to do. Anybody who was opposed to him there.
That's right.
And they could have cited where he's praised Farrell for all these years.
But he didn't have enough steam in that. They didn't have enough steam in that convention to do it, or they'd have done it. Gibbons would have done it.
Of course he would.
And I think...
I thought Gibbons... this conversation has really instructed me something about Gibbons. Because I always had the idea that Gibbons was sort of a left-winger of some sort.
He purports to be.
He purports to be a member of the Socialist Party, and he was.
Was?
I was sent out with him in Chicago to the first convention that we attended after we were in the SP, and Norman Thomas called a halt in the convention because the cab drivers were out, and he said, I want a name. To go to his lawyer had asked him to do this. I forget the lawyer's name now. It was his lawyer, a member of the Socialist Party. And he said, I'd like to nominate Al Gibbons and Vincent Dunn to go out and see what they can do. The lawyer wants to talk to them, see if there's a possibility of getting them a place in the CIO. That's what they wanted. They didn't want to go in the AFL. Mm-hmm. So we went there and we found out what was the matter and we said, why don't you send a wire to him? See what he'll say. And they sent a wire and they got an immediate reply. But he didn't want to be with the Teamsters now. He and Dan Tobin were
making a bed together.
A peace now and he didn't want to butt into the Teamsters Union. So he couldn't give him a... And then we were up against what to do. And I said, well, you can't be an independent union with this big push for the CIO. You better get into the AFL if you can't get into any other union. Well, at first the Teamsters were against it. And we were sent to speak to the rank and file on this question. I was the one that spoke. Advised them to do that, not to go independent here because you'll have two sides after you in the first place. Every one of you know that it's hard enough to organize the cab drivers and all that, and they all knew it. And they finally agreed that if we could get the AFL Central Labor Union in Chicago to offer them a contract, they would take it. So they asked me to go over to the I was a Teamster then, you know, and Hal wasn't. And I, they knew me in Chicago, they knew my name.
What year was it?
About Minneapolis.
38.
I went over there, and they pulled the little slip out of the ironclad door, you know, and said, who are you? And I gave them my name. They said, we'll see Mr. So-and-so. I forget his name. I was just the secretary of the council.
Les Gowdy.
I forget his name.
Les Gowdy.
No, it was an Irish name, very Irish. I forgot. He talked like Tobin did. So about 10 minutes or 5 minutes elapsed, probably. It seemed like 10 to me. And this guy came to the door, the secretary, and opened the door. He said, come on in, Brother Dunn. What do you come for? He said, you want to see me alone? I said, I probably should talk to you first alone. I'd like to talk to the committee if you haven't here. Well, he said, let's sit down. He invited me in, took me into another room. We were there alone and offered me a drink, sat on the bar, took it on the table. Had him come in, serve it, you know. And I talked to him, told him what he said, we've had trouble, he said, with the cab drivers. You know that, Brother Dunn, he said. Yeah, I said, I know that. But here there's 7,000 of them out on the streets. They want to get into a union. John L. Lewis turned them down, I'm telling you frankly what it was. No use kidding you, you know, you'd find that out anyway. And I think they should be in the union. I've convinced them they should be. They're willing to accept your invitation. Well, he said, that's a serious business, Brother Dunn. I said, yes, because our experience has been very bad with these men. I said, well, I just ask you to put it up to the council, that's all.
Yeah?
He said, I'll do that. I'll do that. Will you make a few remarks about it? I said, yes. And he called out, there was about 6 of them. And finally, he said, now we're
okay, I'm going to go to bed right now.
He said, you'll wait, you'll understand. But then we have to have an executive meeting. I said, of course. Yes. So they were in session about half an hour. He came out and said, they decided yes. That's how the cab driver's been in. Well, they didn't make it over, and I know that. But at least I'm telling you now about what Hal Gibbons was at that time. Mm. And I've known him ever since. I was down there half a dozen times. And he has gone completely to the right now.
I know that's right. See,
no, he's corrupted, in my opinion.
He was an opportunist?
Whether or not. He never recovered from it. I don't put cross marks under people's names so easy.
No, but these are the
different
facts,
change of a different change of the situation, the political climate in this country, and all that. And what happens in the ranks? Mine changes. Mine. I don't know for sure. Farrell, I know, considers these. Not only corrupted, but you never come back. Well, Farrell has different ideas about this.
All right.
I don't think that he has any standing in the union. I don't think he can get to first base. But I wouldn't be even sure of that.
What?
I mean to say, if Hoffa goes to jail, you know, and he probably will. That's not sure either. But they would be a blow-up inside that.
The Teamsters union?
They'd be a struggle for power.
Why? The worst kind.
A struggle for power.
You see? And with the cooperation of Einar Mohn.
Is Einar Mohn in with Gibbons?
Yes. In my opinion, yes, all the way.
Well, you see, the pressure of a guy like Ruth Robin with a million and a quarter people, you know, and the fact they know that they could hurt Dan Tolar, or they could hurt Meany very badly in the building trades, you know. That might turn the trick for all I know. I'm saying that's just my thoughts.
If Hoffa should go to jail, and Gibbons, who's got aspirations, and you're more kind to him than I am, because I know him for 30 years, but you know. And when we were into St. Louis, That's where we had all our difficulties. And we finally won Johnny Ray and Bill Ryan over the local 600. That's where we made our break.
See.
But Cammy was a hoodlum in there trying to dynamite the area contract all the way. Gibbons wasn't giving us a hand at that time. He was ready to cut our throat.
As a matter of fact, he called us down there to help him do what he thought had to be done at the time.
He didn't have the guts to do it himself.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And so when he decided to go over, he never let us know a single thing about it. He didn't call us down there for 3 or 4 years.
I told
him. That to me meant that he had given Papa his pledge of loyalty. That's all. I knew that. Mm-hmm. I was sure that he'd given Papa his pledge of loyalty.
He did.
Sure.
And when he got in,
and he got some trouble with him.
He got in trouble with him. And the way that he used to get out was a flag waving thing in deference to Kennedy, whose little brother was doing the best he could not only to scuttle the Teamsters but the entire American labor movement.
Yeah. True.
And
true.
Here,
oh, this is true.
Gibbons is going to make the great wounded martyr speech over Kennedy.
Yeah.
Say, what time is it? I don't want to.